All right, we're going to get started. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to be talking a little bit about loving through trauma and abuse. So just like Pastor Mark was saying this morning, the best way to start anything when we're talking about difficult stuff is through prayer. So would anybody like to open us up in prayer? Usually I'll pick on a volunteer, but today I don't want to. I'm already volunteering. Would anybody like to self-volunteer to open this up in prayer?
Diamond's
volunteer.
John, thank you.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for our worship service today, a chance to come together, Lord, to praise you, learn about you. Father, we pray as we go into this conversation this morning and we learn more from Cassie that you would be opening our hearts and our minds, helping us, speaking through your Holy Spirit, Lord, to understand the circumstances surrounding those that are dealing with abuse and how we can better love them. Help us to be able to hear and understand each other and to learn. We just pray that you would use Cassie and use the conversation today, Lord, to bring you glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. So I know on the sheet it says abuse, but I thought it would be more better beneficial of our time if we kind of went through a little bit about trauma and how trauma affects us. So I'm going to do two things today. I'm going to talk to you about science, and I'm going to talk to you about God, and I'm going to talk to you about how they connect and why God has led me on the path to understand how both science and the way that he's designed us to think about stuff, those who are not walking and know him personally, also connects largely to how Christ designed us. So just so you know, so if you're one of those people that's like, science and faith don't go together, I'm putting the caveat out. You can leave, that's fine if you really want to stay there. I'm not going to judge that. So, speaking of that, anytime that I talk with anyone about this particular subject, I like to make sure that we know that first aid is the most important thing, right? So, we teach our kids from a little age, hopefully, to not to touch hot things, right? How many of you would like to stick your hand on a hot burner? Okay, we got one. There's always someone. But I would stop that one from putting her hand on that hot burner. So this is like kind of like that. So I want you to be aware of yourself, to pay attention to what's going on. So if at any point in time there's something in here or you're feeling some kind of way and you feel like you need to take a step out or break or anything like that, even if your body is calling you to take that step, by either like some stress stuff that's going on, or your actual bowels. Feel free to leave the room, no questions asked. I also ask that anyone in this room makes that commitment to not ask the questions as to why anyone left. Deep breaths are always your friend. We're going to talk a little bit more about this today. I know I kind of said last week, for those of you who are with me. Write down questions. If something doesn't make sense, if you really feel like it's super important, I'm going to try to answer all the questions I can today. I can stay after a little bit. Isaac and I aren't able to, so I will try to answer the questions to the best of my ability, but I also say there's a lot of things I just don't know, and I'm okay with that. The biggest thing to remember is that we serve a big God, and we serve a God who's created every human, no matter what the world has said about them, that God designed them and created them and gave them breath. So it was important for me to remember when I started really trying to put these pieces together and I started in my line of work, that if someone was put in front of me, either A, God did it because I needed to learn something, or B, because they needed to learn something from me. And that the two big things was that we were both created by God. There are people in the world that I do not like, that I don't get along with, that I would like to stay somewhere else. But that has always held me to understand about how to love other people, is that if God chose you to be here, you have a purpose. I may not be a part of that purpose, and that's okay. But he chose you to be here, so it is my responsibility to honor that. So keep that in mind as we talk through this. Okay, so... This is our dog, Ace.
Yes. I'm looking at you like, why are you taking this picture?
Yes. So we're going to talk I'm gonna use him because it's just a cool kind of God thing that he gave Ace to us. Some of you might have met him because he's been here a little bit. And I talked about him last week, but he's a great way to explain some of the ways that trauma and abuse kind of affect us. He's just a natural God-given gift to me, to both of us. But so a little bit about my background and my history. God started me on the journey of trying to understand this when he gave me my own personal story with abuse. When I was 7, 8 is when the world opened up and shifted for me. And so from that time frame, I didn't understand what was going on, and I didn't understand there was something wrong with me. And I grew up that way. And it wasn't until I got saved that God made it very clear to me that I had value, even if other people didn't see it. Okay, so I think that that's a lot of the reasons that God gave me the gifts that he did. Until that time frame, until that event happened in my life, I saw the world different. And then something happened. It was outside of my control and outside of everyone else's control. Well, a lot of people that loved me outside of their control. And the world shifted for me. And I understand now why God had that happen. Because in that moment, I had already had the gifts that God had given me naturally. But when that happened to me, it grew this different part and this different kind of love. It wasn't until I really started to understand trauma and how trauma affects us, and I understood the science side, that I really was able to pull that together. And so when I was praying about what to talk to you all about and how to bring this up, I thought about telling some stories about personal people that God's put in my life that were struggle buses from the beginning. One in particular who I was like, I want to love you from out there. But then I kept thinking, the more I kept thinking about it, I was like, I think that this is that time frame for you all to understand that all of the trauma and abuse is so common in our world because sin is such a big problem. And until God comes back and redeems his people and takes us back with him, it's going to be here. But he gave it to us for a purpose. And so I wanted to explain why I'm on this road, why this is something that's super important to me, why I can get a little bit pushy about how we love people, why I make it a personal journey to understand why God created someone, especially if I don't like that someone. There have been many moments on my trauma journey of understanding how it affected me, but also then understanding how I can help others in it, that God has put different people in my life, and I'm like, no, stop. I don't want them. And they keep coming around, and as I've grown in my faith, God's like, Cassie, pray. All right, deal. And we do it. And some of those people are some of the most important people in my life now because they've shifted how I see other things, and I've taken me out myself. I've gotten the ability and the privilege to watch them shift their brain to understand how God loves them and then understand what their purpose is. And if you get the chance to walk on a journey with someone in that, it is hands down the most rewarding thing, because in those moments is when I get to see God in a real physical way. So for me, this is a super important part. So Ace is going to talk to us a little bit about Aces. It's kind of cool that in the trauma 101, trauma world, that Aces are a thing that we talk about all the time. And it was interesting, just unique, that when we found our dog and we knew it was him, that his name was Ace, and I said, should we change it? And Isaac was like, no, it's good. And it wasn't until a couple months later that I'm at work and I'm talking about my dog, and they're like, aw, Ace has Aces. And I was like, what? Oh, yeah. So in the trauma world, ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. So I'm going to show you a short clip that's going to explain a little bit about how we get this. And so keep in mind that as in the U.S. anyhow, in the like somewhere around like the beginning, the mid 84-83, we started to have this like awakening moment in our country that we needed to realize how to build safety and what that looked like. And so there started to be this larger conversation about what does that look like, and that what happens to you could affect you as an adult. So as what happens to you as a child could affect you as an adult. So all of a sudden this like aha moment of maybe these are connected. So this there was a study that was born out of it. So I'm going to show you this, and then we can talk about it a little bit. And Isaac tells me this is going to work. So
it's wonderful.
But now I've lost it. See, this is why I need you, Isaac.
I mean,
help me find it.
Help me.
What does your parents' divorce have to do with your risk for heart disease? If your mother had a drinking problem when you were growing up, are you more likely to suffer from depression as an adult? Here's what you should know about ACEs. ACEs stand for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Extremely stressful events that can happen to a child growing up. Some experiences are so stressful that they can alter brain development, as well as the immune system, increasing the risk of lifelong health and social problems in adulthood. The term comes from the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, landmark research that shed new light on the root cause of everything from stroke and liver disease to substance abuse and mental illness. In the late 1990s, an epidemiologist from the Centers for Disease Control and a preventive medicine doctor at Kaiser Permanente set out to understand the association between childhood experience and lifelong health. They asked over 17,000 people in the Kaiser Health Plan in San Diego about their health history, as well as difficult questions about their experiences growing up. Anda and Felitti tallied up 10 different kinds of adversity in this largely middle-class and college-educated population. They were stunned to see how common ACEs were. 21% of all respondents were sexually abused as children. 19% grew up with someone who suffered mental illness. 28% had been physically abused. And 2 out of 3 respondents had experienced at least one ACE. The researchers next looked at how someone's ACE score, or the number of adversities they experienced, related to a wide array of serious health and social problems. They saw that the more ACEs someone had, the greater their risk for poor outcomes compared with someone with no ACEs. Someone with an ACE score of 4 had twice the risk of heart disease and cancer. Someone with an ACE score of 5 had an 8 times greater chance of being an alcoholic. And those with an ACE score of 6 or more, on average, died 20 years earlier. With every major problem they looked at in the ACE study, the risk went up for each additional adverse experience in childhood. As Dr. Robert Anda says, what's predictable is preventable. It's important to remember that ACEs are not destiny. ACEs are a tool for understanding the health of a population as a whole. For individuals, an ACE score can be a tool for understanding their own risk for health and social problems, and empower them to make changes for themselves and their children. ACEs tend to get passed down from generation to generation and are common across all income levels, races, and cultures. But increasingly, people of all different professions and backgrounds are coming together to discuss how ACEs affect their communities. They're finding new ways to treat and prevent ACEs. Many doctors are starting to screen their patients for ACEs as part of their medical history. More schools are becoming trauma-informed, considering the source of problem behavior when disciplining their students instead of immediately suspending or expelling them. To learn more about interrupting the cycle of adversity and improving health and well-being for the next generation, please visit kpjrfilms.co.
Has anybody ever heard of ACEs before? Okay, so I got some yeses and some nos. What did we find interesting about it?
It's all demographics.
Who said that, Sam? So here's the thing that, as I'm listening to this, it just occurred to me someone say it, is that sin affects all demographics.
You think like that, Rich?
Yeah. Like there's no one that's outside of someone else's sin choice to affect us, right? You get in the car, you can be affected. Like, so that's interesting. Go ahead. Did you have something?
No.
Okay. It left. I'm sorry.
It'll be back.
Okay. any other thoughts? Anything that was interesting? Yeah.
It's like the way you were learned, like from a household that was dysfunctional. It's a learning, you know, parents have the teacher talk to them. Children.
Yeah.
So it's a learning, it's like...
Goes to that question of nature versus nurture, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that. I'm glad that you brought that up.
I didn't realize like things like cancer, liver disease, like that there was any connection between that and me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And if you think about it, and we're going to flesh this out a little bit more because we're going to talk about how God designed the brain, and then we're going to talk about what science says about the brain and how they actually connect. But if you think about it, if your caregiver, somebody that's in your household that you love, has a serious chronic illness, it's definitely going to affect the way that they interact with you, right? And how you're trained. So, that's cool. What else? Yeah.
I love how they just mentioned that ACEs is not destiny.
I'm glad you said it. So that's going to, I'm going to make you say it again if you're okay with that at the end. Because that's what the cool thing about God and in the work that I do, I have gotten to understand how the human brain works so much, and then my big passion is how trauma affects the brain. And the more I study it, the more I'm like so in amazement of God, because God has designed the brain in order to heal, but God has also designed the body in order to heal, and that there isn't, God is our destiny. And so no matter what you interact with in your life or what happens to you, from someone else or because you inflicted on yourself, God is your ultimate destiny, and he is that power of change. So, any other thoughts about ACEs? Anything we found interesting? Anything we disagreed with? Disagreements are okay, too. Okay,
well,
so...
I do have one more thing.
Yeah.
What about injury? I mean, I saw things where people are interacting with people. What about somebody fell off the bike and hit their head, you know, is that an adverse childhood experience?
So that's a good point. So when this study was done, they were just looking at like these major, there's the three major categories that they were looking at. And we've expanded a lot of this as we started to really understand how trauma affects the world. And it was interesting as I'm reading all of my own like research that I've collected and stuff like that, I had all these like epiphanies of like, oh, that's how God designs us and that's how God does things. But there is a lot that's been expanded on about what happens to us and how it can affect us. What they're looking at in this study is like toxic stress is really what they're focused at. So although sometimes that can be toxic stress, so it can be a super stressful moment depending on what happens after that, can really define if that's going to change, like, body or brain chemistry. So that's more what they're talking about, but we've expanded this. That's why this is, like, the beginning.
Okay.
And then we've, like, grown on it. So I wanted to show you all the beginning of where the trauma world has talked about. And really, this has only been from, like, the 90s. This one, this, like, was a discussion. So if you think history-wise, like, that's not a lot of time, right? Okay. So, trauma and the brain. Sorry, I just told you. When God brought me through my own healing and through my own understanding, I started to be really fascinated and that I could connect with somebody and know that something had happened. Like, I didn't necessarily know what it was, but God had given me this gift, and I started to, like, try to want to understand what that was. And so I was told that as a little kid, before my own trauma happened, that my mom would say that I just had this ability to talk with people. And to, like, she's like, you just see how they were. Like, it was just a natural gift that God had given me to see people. When my event happened, it was over a year span of time, that, you know, as I've talked with my mom now and my parents, I shifted and changed. And it wasn't until I came back to my own healing that resurfaced, but in, like, an intense kind of way, which is cool, because I think that God gave me these gifts so that this is what I could do. So I started to really be fascinated by trauma in the brain. So stress responses, everybody has probably heard fight or flight. Freeze is one too. Okay, it is less talked about, but we're starting to have this more understanding of what freeze is. So freeze is an actual stress response. Now, the thing about stress responses is they're coded into your brain when God designs and builds your brain and you're born. So you can control a little bit about how you stress response to an event, but not 100%, because it's just part of how God designed you. So if you are a freeze person, this means that your whole body shuts down and you feel like you're kind of, we call it toxic immobility. So, like, you can't feel like you just can't move. And your brain will literally, like, kind of just slow itself down so that you can survive. So all of these stress hormones, God designed these in our brains so that we can survive. Okay. questions, thoughts about this? Yeah.
I've experienced all three of those. Okay, personally, it all depends on what the situation is, how you might respond. You might think that, like the fight one, I might think that, well, maybe that's the best way to go, because I could do this. Okay, but the flight one is,
yeah,
like, I have no control here. I need to just leave,
yeah,
leave the situation. And then the freeze one, I don't know if I've experienced that, but...
So I like that you said it, because there's a difference, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more. This is our first response. So in that one dramatic moment, and it could be a second, or it could be a longer period of time, you will experience one of these. It'll be like that top physical gut reaction, and that's because of the lower part of our brain. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So interesting to note about, there's a stress hormone. It's called cortisol. Does anybody know anything about cortisol? Have we heard that before? Okay. So cortisol is our stress hormone. So I'm going to discuss a little bit more about how cortisol works in the brain, how that kind of functions and works. The other parts, so the stress hormone, but the other stress, like other chemicals for that help you navigate this world, are adrenaline and norepinephrine. I can never say that one. There, who said it? Somebody said it. Thank you. It's always
That's
there. Can't
you
do it.
Doctor.
I appreciate that. And those help us to navigate that stuff, right? So this is an actual, like, you breathing kind of response, okay? So when we're talking about trauma and abuse, what we're talking about is such a significant response. So if you're driving and you spin out your car because of snow, not that that's not a significant response. There's definitely something that's necessary, needed to be there. But you have your license, hopefully. you probably have been in some sort of circumstances like that before. Depending on who taught you how to drive, I'm sure they talked to you about ice and snow and stuff like that. So you already have these things in the back. What we're talking about here is when it's a natural response, and in kids especially, as their brain is developing, high levels of cortisol released into the brain on a regular or continuous basis can produce some of this stuff on this side. And so the way cortisol works is not a bad drug. It's actually a great, cool thing that God does for us. But so if we look at the brain here, the amygdala, this teeny tiny little thing, and we talk about it a lot in trauma, but the amygdala detects things that are scary and dangerous in the environment. And so that's like, that's your first alarm system. So if you think about it, if you're making popcorn in the microwave, has anybody ever made popcorn and the fire alarm goes off?
Yep.
It's happened in my office. We're no longer allowed to have it. So this is, we kind of call that your alarm system. And then what it does is it starts to, you know, goes to the hippocampus, wakes up the pituitary gland, it goes all the way, and then it releases that cortisol, and that cortisol helps you to manage stress and whatever that threat is. So what happens, though, is if you have experienced a large number of events, such as domestic violence in the home, the loss of a caregiver, alcoholism, drug addiction, those kind of things, this is like a constant running thing. And what happens is it sends out all of these like navigating through our brain, and it rewires how our brain kind of functions and works. It's also pretty cool, and I think it's really interesting and neat, and I did not put it in here, but in kids who have a lot of toxic stress that they've been, when they're growing up, as adults, the amygdala is bigger. Because they needed that to survive. So the amygdala is bigger because we have to constantly be aware of a threat. The other cool thing, though, and we don't talk about this on the trauma science world, but I'm going to talk about it on the God side, is that God, the way God designs our brain, is that through compassion, connection, some healing stuff, that can reshape itself, and you can lower it. And the patterns that are designed in your brain, we can make new ones. So science, on the science side, they're like, yeah, the brain just does this, right? Because we're designed to adapt, right? So that, like, you know, Darwin theory of we're gonna adapt. The God side, though, says, I did this intentionally so that you can know how to heal and you can know what the power of love looks like. So, but it's interesting to note and understand high cortisol levels, what they can do within your brain. So it can affect weight gain. A lot of people who have had experience one or two verses of ACEs and or up and left unchecked of some passion will oftentimes have trouble with their stomach. So this means you'll feel nauseous a lot. Sometimes it's like an irritable bowel kind of thing. It can be a lot of those different things, but because our gut is like that, we talk about it like the second brain, right? Sometimes when your brain has been telling you, listen, you need to eat, do that, and you're not listening to your body anymore, eventually your stomach's going to do what? Growl. Yeah, it's going to growl. Yeah. And it's, or it's like going to tighten, right? You might actually feel physical pain in there because you need that. Because your brain's not listening. It's like been telling your body. So that gut part speaks it up. But cortisol ends up kind of like resting in the gut in some ways. Mood swings, this is a big one. Increased anxiety. So the increased anxiety is a big one too, and that's something that I'll talk a little bit about that speaking with somebody who really understands this is super helpful to help you lower that anxiety responses. Poor sleeping. So feeling really wired or feeling really tired, so that like constant I'm going or not going, increased urination, like all this kind of stuff. The other thing that I think is cool on the God side is that God designed and created all this stuff, and He created each human being the way they are. And so labels like bipolar, manic depressant, all that kind of stuff, like we put that on people because we're trying to understand it, but God does this. So. And God doesn't put those labels on us. And He knows where you came from. He knows how your body works. He also knows how you're going to heal. If you let him hold some of that part so that you can heal. Thoughts, questions about this? Yeah.
Yeah, I came from a home where there was an awful lot of anger. My mother, who had a very, very bad temper, you know, constantly to, like, hit my father, you know, every time she would say something, like, because he had trouble hearing. So she would get to the point where she got so mad she started hitting. Mm-hmm. And I do mean hitting and throwing things and said some very hurtful things right in front of me. Like,
mm-hmm.
She wishes he was dead.
Yeah.
She's sorry she ever married him.
Yeah.
And she said that, you know, he was a piece of garbage. And I witnessed that. I saw that whole thing right before my eyes.
And it affected you.
And, you know, I'm the only child in my family. My mother, died about in 2001 because she had diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost both legs, she went blind, and she had strokes. I love my mom dearly, but I also told my mom, you know, what you've done, you didn't train me how to deal with anger the right way.
I'm glad you said it,
Brad. Yeah.
Thanks.
And when I saw that, I froze. You know, I loved my mom very dearly, but her temper scared me, and that, you know, I saw that, and that kind of, like, resonates in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be like that no more.
Okay.
I, you know, because I want to change that.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad that you shared it. Thank you for sharing pieces of your story. So that brings up the point that where I want to go to next. This is a cool God moment for me. I love that when God does these things. So the way that the brain is designed, there's three different parts that we talk about. So you have the lower, so when a baby is born, you have the lower part of the brain that's connected to the brainstem, right? So we kind of call this like the reptilian brain or the olfactory brain. And so that's why if you've ever spent any time with an infant, they just do things like to survive, right? So why are you crying? Why are you crying? You've been fed. You're not dirty. Like what? Like why are you crying? Because they're looking for something, but they haven't developed the wherewithal to tell you what that is. I think about this oftentimes with my dog too, because he's not a human. His brain is not developed like this, so he really sometimes just lives in this old factory brain. And I'm like, what do you need? And you can't speak to me. Well, you can, but. So that's the beginning part. And so the way that we encode stress lives down here in this lower part of our brain, which is the beginning part. And then we go, so as I was doing my research, I thought it was cool to pull this out, is that the lower part of our brain is responsible for survival, regulating your heartbeat, breathing. It's responsible for all those, like, just natural, like, how do you survive and live kind of deal. So as a kid develops, 5, 6, 7, we start to develop this mid part of our brain, which is why if you've ever spent any time with a 5-year-old, they want to do everything by themselves. Yeah? You're like, get in the car. Like, I don't care if you have your shoes on anymore. Just get in the car. Right? Because they're developing that part. And so the mid part of our brain has the emotions, learning, memory. This is reward and motivation. This is where, like, you ever sat down with dinner with a kid in that age frame and you're like, eat this portion and you can have this, right? And you as an adult are figuring out, like, what am I going to give to them that they're going to really want, that they're going to eat their green beans? Because our reward system is being built. And that's like helping us to connect. This part of the brain helps us to feel contentment. So lower part, survival. Mid part, contentment. Upper part, that front part, that starts to develop around 10. Starts to becoming developed. It's not fully developed for most people until they're about their early 20s. So the front part of our brain is the higher mental functioning. So the why did you do that? That's that part of the brain. It helps us to reason and, like, connect stuff. Like, you know, I'm hungry, so I chose to eat your sandwich. Right? and that's that connecting part. Regulates feelings and desires. This is how we start to realize what we need, like feeling what our feelings and desires are. Complex reasoning, abstract connections, and attachment to other people. So this front part, this later, that's developed through your, like, from around 10-ish, somewhere in there, to your early 20s. This is the part of the brain that helps you feel loved. So this is the part that kind of codes to feeling loved. So if you think about, you need to survive, you need to feel some sort of contentment, so like, my belly's full, I feel okay, like, I'm connected to those people, and then the feeling loved comes in, okay? When we think about trauma pain, Isaac, I can't, it's broken.
It's broken.
I don't know.
Fixed it.
He's my miracle worker. So if we think about the way that we, if you have, you know how to feel loved, you can feel relatively content, and your survival needs are always met, then when you encounter somebody who's walking and still physically walking out their abuse, you're going to go, but I care about you. Why don't you get that? And they're going, I just don't. And you're frustrated. Because your brain is looking like this and feeling like this. So this is like, this is the way when we feel connected and content. People who have suffered significant abuse or trauma, and that's a part of their world, without that healing pieces and understanding how God has helped to create them, they're looking at only this. So the feeling loved piece, that's not, they're not there. Make sense? I talk about this a lot with like, kids who've developed and gone through this when we in our behavioral systems. We do about a lot of like, why did you do that? And they're like, I don't know. We're like, yes, you do, but they don't. And if you understand how the brain works and trauma works, they like they haven't developed that piece because they're living in survival. But if you change the sentence as to, Johnny, what happened? I can tell you what happened because I can tell you how I survived. Make sense? This is where that changing of, just the changing of the words helps you develop what the story is. So what happened? Tell me what happened, like, rather than like, why did you do that? Why did you punch him in the face? What happened? Because then it can help you understand like, that amygdala went off high alert because Billy said, I hate you with a lot of explicits and called you something. And you related that to how your dad speaks to you, or whatever that looks like, right? Now I'm living in survival. When I'm living in survival, I'm not thinking rationally. I'm not thinking about how to like connect those things. I'm not thinking about how, I don't care about how you feel. I'm just thinking about how to protect myself. Make sense? So I love the way that you brought it up is that fight, flight, and freeze, we kind of all think those ways. But once we've trained ourselves, right? When we can keep our full brain on, then we can kind of figure out, what do I need to do? Do I need to escape the situation? Do I need to not escape the situation? Like, is it better to just stand still and not say anything? Do I need to punch you, right? In order to protect myself? Do I need to pick up a bat? Like, what do I need to do? Because you have that full brain, but when you've experienced abuse and you have not understood it and not walked through your healing with God, it's hard to get to that place. Make sense? Have I lost anyone? Are we confused? Do we need help? Is this overwhelming? Are we good? Check in with yourself. We good. Okay. I got some thumbs up, so I accept that. Remember, you can leave, and I will not be upset. Okay, so if we're thinking about this way, this is what links us back to the ACEs. This is what links us back to ACE. So here's my cool thing that I connected this week. Like, it was one of those things that's always been sitting in the back of my head, but because I was preparing for this and I was preparing to talk to a bunch of people who love God, who have actively chosen to be here in a church because you have some sort of connection with God, it put this whole understanding, this is probably the only place I'll get to say this, is that the way that God tells us to talk and to manage and deal with people is through connections and compassion, right? God tells us to look at, like, to think about other people, that Christ lived that out. He was very compassionate to other people. Didn't matter what they were thinking or doing. Like, he'd eat with the prostitutes. He'd eat with the tax collector. Like, he was, like, compassionate about stuff, right? And so God tells us that we're supposed to act this way and build connections. And so in the trauma world, on the science side, this is what they say helps to heal and flip this back to the right way, which I think is super cool that God's already told us to do this. It's in the Bible. It's the way he handles and deals with people. Science is now saying, like, best way to handle and help people who've suffered abuse and stuff like that is to be compassionate and to build connections. And there is a $397 training on the brain and building compassion. Right? And it popped up in my email this week, and it was like, do this training. It's all about compassion. And I thought, it's pretty much my walk with the Lord. So I'm good. I'm not going to spend like an extra $400 for that. But it's this whole thing. And when I started to read some of the research, I was like, literally, this is how the Bible tells us that we need to deal with people. But now we're telling it in a science kind of way to professionals who deal with trauma. Like, it just kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, well, good job that they're teaching biblical facts. They don't know that yet. But that's actually how we flip this, is one person's involvement. Okay, so I can speak from my own personal story. It wasn't until I was about 15 that I met a youth leader, and she saw me, like really saw me. And she listened to me, and she allowed me to be who I was. She didn't judge me. She would come and find me, but I was like not showing up. Like she saw me, she was there, and she was like the actual physical embodiment of the presence of God for me, and helped to shift my brain. And because of Kelly Evans, I started to realize that I had value and I had worth, and I was worth something. And she was actually the first person who said to me, "I think God's gifted you in this, and I'm gonna pray about that." I was like, "Do whatever you want, I don't care." But she helped to shift it for me, you know. And then God brought other people into my life who spoke different pieces. And I can think about it as all these different people that I've engaged with, that I would love for them to come to share their story. My pseudo-daughter, I met her in 2006 when I was in that Philly. And she's got a great story. She said to me this week when I was telling her about this, she was like, "Cassie, you can tell whatever you want." And I was like, "I'm not going to tell your story, but I will tell my side of the story." But you drove me crazy for like 10 years. But I got the chance to see her accept Christ. I got the chance to see her finally say back to me, like, "I know God put you in my life, and I couldn't change that." And I was like, "Well, that's good. It's killing me." I got to see her understand what value meant. All because the moment that I met her, I was like, "She's going to drive me crazy." And God was like, "Love her." Okay. I don't know what that means. And that at that point in time, this was before I knew any of this stuff. I just knew that God calls me to love people, he calls me to be compassionate, and he calls me to connect with people. That was all I knew. So I did. And now I get the chance to see her do wonderful, incredible things. And at some point in time, it's my hope that she will come here and be able to speak her story. But I can tell you a lot of those stories, a lot of the, like, different times in, that God let me be that one person. So that's your first step. So,
Cassie.
Yes.
Can I ask?
Uh-huh.
I see what you're saying, but I meet somebody and they're treating me like I'm their enemy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're very actively
mm-hmm.
pushing me away, and
yes.
I want to be compassionate.
Yes.
But they're actively.
Yes.
Get out of my face.
Yes.
Get away.
Yes.
How do I respond to that?
Thank you. Because that's where I'm going next. See, God's so cool. So, helping you in pieces.
I moved ahead of time.
I did not. We acted that out. So, here's what we do. to be compassionate to someone else does not mean that you have to constantly like be in their world. But it is to understand that they are going through something. And the biggest thing that I can say is what you can do, especially in situations like that, is ask for permission. So I want to get to know you, and I want to do that kind of stuff. Are you okay with that? If the answer is no, all right, I respect that. But I want you to hear that I do want to know that. Like I would like to. But I'm going to respect that. So move you around. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to check in with you every once in a while if I see you occasionally. I'll be like, hey, what's up? You want to be my friend yet? No? Cool. Okay. When we... So this is my story of Ace, because Ace always helps. He's going to help us out here. Finding a sense of safety, if we think about the brain. Finding a sense of safety. When I'm allowed to make my own choices, I find safety. So this is Ace's safe spot in our apartment. We found out that this is where he was choosing to have a safe spot because when we got him the week of 4th of July, and 4th of July fireworks, and we live in Norristown, so like it everywhere. And he was like freaking out. He was like hiding behind Isaac, and he was hiding behind me, and we couldn't calm him down. We're like, oh my gosh, we feel so bad for you. And we had a bunch of junk in this closet in the bottom, and he went back in there and hid himself, and he stayed in there the whole time. And Isaac and I just sat outside, and we're like, are you ready to come out? We good. And he eventually, like when the fireworks calmed down, he came out and he sat with us. So when I was telling my coworker this is when she was like, Ace has aces! And he needed to stay, so I show her this picture, I actually took this when I was preparing this, because this is where he goes now. But when I showed her the picture of like, that we created this little spot for him in the closet, she was like, oh, you gave him a safe spot. I was like, oh, I guess I did. We really didn't think about it like that. We were just like, you like the closet, we're gonna make it free. So this is where he goes. So when I was preparing this, he wanted to be up with me, and he was like, drive me bonkers. And I was like, no, we need boundaries. And so eventually he goes, and if you can see his little face, he's like, oh, fine. And he waited in there for me, because that was where he felt safe, because I wasn't ready. I was putting my boundaries out, and I'm not ready for you. And then as soon as I was done, I came over to him, and I was like, I'm finished. And he comes out, and he sits with me on the couch, which is what he wanted the whole time. Literally, he wanted to sit on my laptop, was more than what that was. But helping find safety. So if you think about the brain, if a person is, if they're actively going, I don't want you, they are not safe. You may see that there's every sense of safety, but for them, they are not safe. Building that connection with you is not safe. You don't have to necessarily know why, but if I'm saying no, I'm gonna respect that. But you can speak for yourself. Like, I respect that, but I wanna know. And so when you're ready, I want to be that. I want to know that. And if they choose that you are not safe enough for them, that's their choice. This is where you as believers come into play, that you pray for someone else. So pray for someone else to come in involved in their life. So for my pseudo-adopted kid, there was a moment in time frame where she went through all this. Like, she didn't want anything to do with me. So I prayed that someone else would come into her life. And lo and behold, there was a teacher that was in her school that had the same last name as her, and she brought her into her world and spoke to her in a way I couldn't. And it was super cool. And it didn't have to be me. Make sense? So building safety, that's what we have to think about, their survival. If they're actively asking not to engage, there's something we got to create some safety for them. And so choices make us safe. And this is again goes back to God. It's the cool part about God is God gives us these, I mean, really God created you, he could do what he wanted. But yet, he made Adam and Eve, he told them there's this tree, don't do anything with it. But when Eve went over there and talked to the snake, God didn't put lightning down, put a barrier wall. He could do all that, he created the world, and he chose not, he didn't do that. We gotta let people make choices. Okay, find safety. The next set is, this is what you can do to help me in the work that God's given me, is to build healthy connections. So believe stories and stay involved. When someone tells you a part of their story, don't dismiss it. even if you feel like it's not that big of a deal. They tell you part of their story. Don't dismiss it. We all want to be heard and connected. Makes sense? You know, when I go to God and I'm like, I don't like them, God's not like, I don't care about you. Most of the time he's like, okay. And I'll sit with it and he'll keep bringing that person up. Told you I don't like them. Right? But then we find out why they're here. So you can pray. So building connection sometimes is a lot about being patient and waiting and praying. Can I be involved with this person? I feel like you're telling me to, but they're actively being like, no, maybe with a lot of explicits. Okay. But believing stories and staying connected. So this goes back to that safety piece. If I'm always checking in with you, right? And we do this with little kids. Like, go have your tantrum over there. Come back when you're ready. Right? How many parents in here have said that to their kid? Or my sister will step over my nephew when he was little. He'd be lying on the floor, like, walling out. She'd just be like, let me know when you're ready. She'd move on. And eventually he'd sit up and be like, Mom, but they were mean to me. She's like, okay, what happened? And they'd tell her, what did you do? And then he'd tell her, and she'd be like, well, should you have done that? I guess I shouldn't have thrown rocks at them. No, right? But we check in, we do check-ins, like, hey, how are you doing? This is the biggest important piece that you all can do to help me so that we can get to this last place. So my job, my calling, what God's gifted me in doing is helping people understand all of this when they've walked through something. And to be that one person, that voice, that reasoning that you can bounce stuff off of, and that I can be like, you cool, you're not crazy. And let's practice, let's find other things. Like, let me teach you the stuff that I know and to find out what works for you. But they can never get to me if people don't do these things first. Make sense? And historically speaking, in the work that I've done, people do not heal unless there are people outside of counseling that do these for them. They just don't. Because God tells us, have compassion, love people. So, love God, love people. If I don't have people out in the world that's going to do this kind of stuff, it makes my job a whole lot harder. Make sense? Questions, thoughts? This is your time for it. Yes.
Okay, so Pastor Taylor brought up the idea that somebody is actively pushing away. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a chance to have a relationship with that person, then you can set up the safe spot. Then you can set up, you know, the next level of that. But what happens in that moment when you, that's all you're getting? In other words, you met this person and all of a sudden they're just on that track.
The moment you say, I accept where you are, you already can set up some safety. So if you think about yourself personally, however you manage stress, if you happen to be in your fight, flight, freeze, or whatever that looks like in that moment, and somebody tries to help you, if you don't know them, you're probably going to be like, leave me alone, I'm fine. Right? It's the difference between, like, I hear you, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not just going to leave you in the dust. So I hear what you're saying, I'm going to put out I would like to do this, but I accept that you don't want to, but I'm going to be over here. Right? Because that allows people to make that choice to engage with you. Right? Just like God does with us. How many times in your personal Christ story has God tried to get you to do something and you're like, nah, I'm good. Does that ever happen to anybody? You? Really? Okay. Nobody else? Pastor Taylor? No?
I don't have problems.
He's a liar.
He's a liar. Cassie, I was glad you brought up about prayer, because I was thinking that when you were going through all that stuff, I think, well, yes, him or her might be pushing you away, but the best thing at that point, too, is just to give it to the Lord and either say, as you said, is it I thought you wanted me to help this person, but if not, or maybe soften their heart mm-hmm. to accept my help, or you know what I'm saying?
So. Yeah. The power of choices is not to be underplayed. And so, nor is the power of prayer. So, okay, you don't want my help. Just like you would with your little kid. At some point in time, that five-year-old's like, I can tie my shoe! I'm like, all right. Right? And you're like, we're just going to be like, this is what it is. People who are living in that stressed place, that survival place, we have to let them calm themselves down, however that looks. Even if that looks like something you deem unsafe. Examples, cutting, drug and alcohol, risky sex behaviors, like, I'm probably thinking of a whole bunch more. Checking in for personal safety is always the key. Like, I'm concerned about your body and who you are. And if it's a big scare, big risk, then tell somebody else about it. Because maybe somebody else can get to them in that point and be like, what's going on? What's happening? And maybe they can speak to you in a different kind of way. My personal soapbox is that I struggle with believers with trauma because we get into this place of like, what you're doing is against God. And it's not okay. Although that's true, they're not able to hear that because they're not at a safer place. So if I can say, you going out and binge drinking and doing all this kind of stuff, like I'm concerned that that's not safe for you. So what is a safe spot, right? Like, are you doing it alone? Are you with other people? Do you have a ride home? And then slowly building it up to building those connections about this is what God says and this is why God says it. And I'm not gonna pretend to know where you came from or how your brain works and thinks, but I'm gonna do my best to love you. And I'm gonna do my best to pray for you. I have yet to encounter somebody who, when I say to them, okay, cool, can I pray for you? But they're like, no. Sometimes people are like, yes, but not right now. Cool, because you don't know what's going on inside of my brain. You'll live here. And so I will tell people, I'm like, that's cool. I'm praying for you here. Because you can't change. Just like I can't change you, you can't change me. So you can't change that I'm going to love you. Even if you don't want to deal with me. You can't change that I'm going to pray for you because I know God created and designed you. Make sense? Any other questions, thoughts, concerns? Yeah.
Every now and then this question comes up. What if I don't believe what I'm being told? So it might be mm-hmm. something like one of my children says, Johnny hit me and you know, mm-hmm. or it could be a serious they could be complaining about a serious sexual
event.
So what if kinda I don't believe? I'm not sure that I believe what mm-hmm. I'm being told.
So that happens to me. And it's a good point in question. I almost always come back to God because God will he's got this sneaky way of helping people to reveal their truth. And so sometimes I'm like, I hear you. I'm not so sure I believe you, but that doesn't mean that it's not true. It just means that that's where I'm sitting.
Should I say I don't believe? My gut would say go along with.
It depends. So this is one of those personal checks for yourself. Depends on where you are and where you are in that relationship. Because if you're actively like, I don't believe you, it doesn't always work. But if you're like, I hear you. I don't know if I believe that what you're saying to me is accurate. But that doesn't mean that I can be wrong. That happens. I'm not perfect. So there's I've experienced a great thing when I say that to somebody and I'm praying about it and the person's like, ugh, fine, Cassie, this is what it is. I'm like, okay. Or this is the truth. And sometimes the truth, especially if it's a sin we've committed and we know we're wrong, it's really hard for us to say it, even especially when somebody calls us out, because we know that they care about us. If it's a sin that somebody else has committed to us that our society says is shameful, so which is largely abuse, especially sexual abuse, it's really hard to say that out loud. And depending on who you are in my life, I may feel super uncomfortable saying it out loud. Makes sense? Like, I might think, you're not going to believe me. Even if you say you're going to believe me. Because my history speaks that people don't believe me. Right? So, any other questions, thoughts, concerns?
Is that a flight, a freeze? If you don't recount something because it was so young, you remember it later?
So that's a great question, and I would love to expand on a lot of that. I don't have the time to answer that fully, but I will say that...
I didn't know if that was part of freeze.
It's not. So, but it is part of the stress response. Right. So, what happens in when we're living in survival mode is that everything else becomes not as important. So, like, memory, like remembering how events happened, is not important to surviving. Right. So we encode those memories though in our senses, and so that's a lot of how we can unpack it. I would love to at some point in the future, hopefully, do a longer session or training on trauma and what trauma looks like.
I think it would help us be more compassionate too.
If you got anything from this, speak to the powers that be that are our pastors, mm-hmm. and say, like, maybe this is something we need. If you don't think so, then say that too.
My wife and I went to a continuing education unit kind of training out in Chester County,
mm-hmm.
and it was called Mental Health First Aid.
Yep.
And we got certified.
Yep.
And my perspective on what you're doing here is you've got a whole God factor coming into this,
yeah, yeah.
that is really like,
yep.
this on steroids. And I was like, is there some plan to curricularize?
It's my plan. It's been my plan for like since God called me to this. This is my heart and hope is that,
right.
and there are people that are out there that are doing really good work in helping to build then bridge that gap of understanding how science talks about trauma and how God talks about it. So if it's not clear to you now, this is a huge passion of mine. So it may sound weird, but I love talking about trauma. Because I think every time I meet somebody and I hear their story, I hear God. And to me that reaffirms that I know a king and I'm the creator of the world. So yeah.
I was in an abusive relationship before my husband, but I didn't understand that what was happening to me was abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until years later after I'd gotten out of that relationship that I saw like a list of this is what abuse looks like, and
mm-hmm.
I realized this guy checked off more than half of this.
Mm-hmm.
I was in an abusive relationship, he was an abusive person. And it helped to start, just knowing that that's what it was, helped to start healing, I guess. I just knew there was something wrong with the relationship, but I didn't know what it was.
So thank you for sharing that. And if you haven't picked up, we've had two people that have self-disclosed what's going on in their life. I would venture to guess a really good paycheck. That there are a large number of people that are in our body that have experienced a lot of this stuff that we do not know about. And that we do not understand how to love them better because we don't understand where their experience comes from. So we are out of time. I will say and hang out. But these are my resources that would be helpful or good for you. If this is like spark something for you, I suggest this book a lot to a lot of people. The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog, because it really does help to understand like the chemistry stuff, and the body keeps score. Again, now these are not believer. They don't really walk in that way. But if you look at it in your Christ-like light, you will see how God works all that stuff. But they're good books. And then a lot of my information came from this resource here and the Childhood Trauma Network. So, okay. Can somebody close this out in prayer? I'm going to let you make choices because we just talked about that. Thank you, Cassie.
God, I thank you for Cassie and just for the way that you have worked through her in so many people's lives in our church, outside of our church. I thank you for her passion on the subject, and for the many people who decided to come today to be better informed and to be able to better evaluate how to approach this. I pray that we as a church would be seen as compassionate, that would truly be in each of our hearts, that we would be patient and loving towards others, even if they don't want to be loved and are scared or that they're not safe. And I pray that you would give us eyes to see those people in our lives that have experienced trauma and to guide us in how to best love them and point them towards you. I thank you that you are a big God and that you use every negative situation to bring glory to yourself. And we pray that for anyone who's experienced trauma. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.